At what point in the game did you guys realize we are better than them?
We knew we was better than them before we even got to San Francisco, honestly. I'm not even going to lie to you. Like, the way we studied film and just watched and prepared and how we saw those guys operate, we knew we couldn't be stopped. They knew that they couldn't mess with us, especially defensively. We knew we were the best in the world, best in the league. All week, our mindset was, you know, go out there and show it. These guys can't hang with us, and we were able to prove that on Sunday night.
Time now for the Christian Arcand Show.
Yo, it's all Arcand.
On WEEI.
Good evening. Welcome in. It's the Christian Arcand Show here at WEEI. We are live in our Brighton studios, powered by Verizon. We are Boston Sports Original, and tonight we're here with you for...
Long, long time. Touchdown brings me round.
4 hours, full 4 hour show. Go until 10 o'clock. No more Boomer and Valente, ladies and gentlemen. I know, I'm upset too. Devastated, actually. But yeah, we're here till 10 o'clock tonight. No more Boomer and Valente, no more NFL football Sunday here on WEEI, and no more Patriots football either. It's weird. It's weird thinking about that. Thinking about going into a weekend with no football after, I don't know, 35 weeks is what it felt like. It was a very, very long season, but an exciting one, a good one with a tough ending, and an ending that is, I think, evidenced there by Uchenna Nwosu, who had a big game for the Seahawks. A game that the Patriots just never really had much of a chance in. And I think we all sort of came to realize that as we watched the game. But as more media has come out, and I know Andy opened the show the same way I'm about to open the show, talking about the NFL films and that 40-minute piece that they had out there of behind the scenes on the sideline and mic'd up during the Super Bowl. I watched the whole thing. It was painful to watch it, but I wanted to see and hear what was going on, what was being said, how everybody looked. I thought watching the game on Sunday, I thought just watching the pregame stuff and, you know, guys warming up and guys on the sideline and just sort of the, you know, the little glimpses that you got from that. And you didn't get a lot because you know what these pregame shows are. It's 5 hours of prepackaged, you know, fluff pieces and all that sort of stuff. And that's, you know, that's fine. That's what Super Bowl pregame is all about. You know, that's what they do. However, watching that and just the little small windows into the psyche of these guys warming up on the sideline, it didn't seem like the Patriots were particularly fired up. It didn't seem like they were feeling good about their chances, like from jump, from the rip. And that was just sort of something I brushed off, like, you know, I'm only seeing a couple of seconds here of Drake May and, you know, guys on the sideline and Vrabel and everybody else. And you know, you see the Seahawks, everybody, big smiles, everyone's pumping themselves up. They're all, you know, we're ready, this is it, here we are. And the Patriots, it was much more, okay, like, just keep it together, you know? Like, it just seemed like there was a different demeanor. And after watching NFL films, that it was much, much more than that. It was much more than that. I was not shocked by anything I saw. The only thing that I found shocking was just how early it started and how it never really shifted. And one thing that stuck out in the first 5 minutes of this 40-minute program, the Seahawks are strutting around. They're confident. Leonard Williams, this is why we're here. We're here to do it. You know, like it was like a foregone conclusion. Honestly, what it reminded me of was how the Rams were talking about the 2001 Super Bowl. They had that level of confidence. And that team was a 14.5-point favorite. These Seahawks were favored by 4.5, which I still thought was a big number. Definitely not big enough. Just the way they were talking about how they knew what they wanted to do, and they were just very sure that they were going to win. Meanwhile, the Patriots, not like that at all. Early on in the game, Vrabel's telling May to smile and have fun. Steph Diggs, same thing. This was before the game started. Smile, come on. Steph Diggs, oh, man, you're 23 years old in the Super Bowl. Got to smile a little bit. And Drake's like, yeah. Like he knew something. obviously, Drake May's 23. He's playing in his first Super Bowl. He's going to be nervous. But it was a stark contrast. It was very stark. And on the other hand here, and before I go real deep into any of this, I'll acknowledge the fact that NFL Films is going to edit it the way they want to edit it, okay? They're going to highlight what they want you to see and what tells a better story for them, and that's just how any documentary, anything works. I mean, that's just TV, okay? First thing I noticed after that, once the game started, was after the first series where they moved the ball a bit, right? I mean, they crossed the 50, which they didn't do much of afterwards. On third down, May gets sacked, and Vrabel's already in damage control mode and trying to get May to sort of, you know, keep his head up and all of that. Here's what that sounded like.
Hey, we got to be alert. Hey, movement, movement, movement. Hey, get your head up. Hey, look at me. That's it. Hey, settle down. Okay, let's be ready. Hey, let's be ready, locked in. Keep our heads up. They're jumping around. We got to keep our heads up. Keep our heads up. Yeah, they're not going to just let us kill them. Keep our eyes up. Face up. Face up. Face up. Chest up.
Okay, that was after the first series. And all that face up, chest up stuff, I think he was talking to the line. But he may as well have been talking to Drake May. And you heard that little bit with Drake May. Hey, eyes up. Look at me. Settle down. Calm down. It was the first series. Now, here's why I think that especially may have bothered Drake May. Is because the first series is the one that you practiced the most. That's the one you had the walkthrough with. That's the one that you should be able to execute probably better than any other series you're going to have for the rest of the game, right? You needed more examples of that? Just watch the Patriots' defense against every team in the first series that they had all year long. That was the only time any of these teams ever scored, right? I mean, it's the only time a lot of them did. And for the Patriots, and for May in particular, that first series, I think they were all expecting to end in points. And when they got stuffed at the 50, May was already, you could tell, not feeling great. Then there was the Riley Mills sack. That was another one I thought looked a lot worse the second time around. It was that play where Riley Mills, this rookie from Notre Dame, just completely debos Jared Wilson. I mean, just runs him right back into Drake May. And we all remember that. And then May going down with Mills going around him. But watching that again, May had room to get out of the way of that. He had room to avoid that, and he stood there. I mean, he just stood there like a statue. And not only did his guy back into it, and again, I'm not going to blame Drake May for this 100%. Jared Wilson got absolutely dominated. Absolutely dominated. But May's just standing there. And Wilson and Mills pretty much just knock him over like a bowling pin. And there was room to avoid that, and he just stood there.
Hey, look at me.
It was also, I thought, a rough game for Jalen Hawkins, who I did love this year. I thought he had a great year, but he had that missed tackle on the sack on Darnold, where Darnold made that great escape play. And he also tried to tackle Kenneth Walker on the sideline. Walker got loose, and whenever he did, kicked it to the outside, he seemed to get a big pickup. And Hawkins was running right at him, and he went to tackle him, and it was like he wasn't even there. It was like he didn't exist. So that was sort of the, and again, NFL Films, they edit stuff, so we don't get to see and hear everything. But after that Mills sack, everybody on that Seattle sideline is going nuts. They're pumping him up after. You know, for example, on the other side, Christian Gonzalez made that incredible play on Rashid Shaheed, dive out full extension. After that, they showed a brief cut to the Patriots sideline, and there were a couple of guys smiling, and that was it. That was it. Now, again, NFL Films, they edit it how they want to edit it. But that was a huge play. I mean, that was like a signature moment of the game for the losing team. And just the type of play that you could make a logo out of, you know, like the Jordan logo. It was that kind of play. It was great. And even that, I mean, they just couldn't enjoy it. They just knew what was happening. They were watching it all unravel right in front of them. I thought that showed the contrast a lot. The contrast between what they were doing and what the Patriots were doing. At the end of the half, I forget which O-lineman it was, but some offensive lineman goes up to Leonard Williams. Do we have this one, Joe? This is Leonard Williams interacting with his offensive lineman. They're going to the locker room, and they only have field goals so far. They've not scored a touchdown yet, and this is what that interaction sounded like.
We'll start finishing in the end zone for you guys.
Yes, sir.
Right?
Yes, sir. Don't worry about it.
And ask us off.
Yes, sir. They're not about to score. One more high, baby. That's in the world. It'll be you.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So that was the basic interaction that you had between the offense and the defense going into the half. Now, that was going into the half. Later on in the game, and this has been played a lot, and I heard this last night, but we didn't have time for it. Christian Barmore and Milton Williams on the sideline towards the end of the game, once it was pretty clear that Seattle had it in the bag. Barmore and Williams, well, it was mostly Barmore, but they were on the sideline, and listen to this.
We're good, baby. Come on.
Okay. Couple of things. I'm not in Christian Barmore's head, so I can't tell you exactly what he meant when he said it wasn't us about, I don't know, a dozen times, it sounded like. I don't know exactly what he meant by that. What it sounds like he meant was that it wasn't our fault on the defense. It wasn't us. We didn't lose this game because of us. But it also could have meant we didn't play as well as we normally have. It wasn't us. This wasn't us out there. This isn't how we usually play. It's up to you to decide which one of those you think he's saying. I can tell you this. Milton Williams is being pretty diplomatic about it, whatever it is that Barmore is trying to convey there. Williams is saying, yeah, it's going to sting for a little bit. Yeah, you know, like, we'll get back in the lab. We'll go out and do it. And that, and so, whatever. I understand. It's frustrating. I mean, Barmore was, you know, upset, and they were all upset. But if what he was saying was the first thing, like, it wasn't us, they didn't lose because of us. Kenneth Walker ran for 135 yards, man. Like, that was he ran all over you. Like, he, and you were part of that run defense, you know? So, and not necessarily that, like, Barmore missed a bunch of tackles or that he was getting overwhelmed or really anything like that at all. I'd say Williams missed a tackle, but he did get pressures on Darnold. Barmore wasn't quite, you know, his normal cell. He wasn't in there making plays and being disruptive. They only sacked Darnold once, and that was that. The run defense, I've talked about this. I talked about it all week. Run defense wasn't really all that great. So Barmore saying it wasn't us, it's kind of you. It's a little bit you. A little bit. You weren't the main reason. You weren't the only reason. But it was definitely a little bit you.
Yeah, and one thing about Barmore, just really quickly, is when you watch it, he's sort of like firing himself up every time he says, it wasn't us, it wasn't us. Like he's trying to hold back some kind of anger, and Milton Williams, luckily, as you said right there, was there being more level-headed.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not going to blame a guy for being upset, and I'm sure he's not the first person to think that on a football team. I heard Wiggy this morning saying that exact thing. He's like, if you think that's not how those guys talk on the sidelines, you're crazy. It's the Super Bowl, so there's mics and cameras everywhere, and every single thing you say and do is going to be recorded on something. But that's not necessarily unusual. The only thing is that it's not necessarily right either. But also, look at the contrast. On one side, you have the offensive lineman going up to the D lineman and saying, hey, we got to get in the end zone for you. And over on the other side, it's, well, it wasn't us, it wasn't us, it wasn't us. Just, I mean, if that doesn't sort of tell you everything you need to know about these two teams and who was ready to go and who wasn't ready to go and who was the more talented, better coached, more confident team, then there's nothing else to really say. Like, that's it. That's it right there. This is day five of the Patriots-Viking funeral, okay? This is where we have to say give our last rites, and that's pretty much it. That video, all 40 minutes of that was pretty much a last rites. You know, that was it. It's praying over the body right there. It's over. Now, it's not to say they can't ever get back, but it's going to be a long road to get back to a Super Bowl. It's going to be a long road to get back to the top of the AFC East with the schedule that they're going to have to play next year. They're going to have to really do a lot in this offseason. It's going to be all very consequential. But that, I think, was really, really the nail in the coffin, I thought. You know, like, just watching that and sort of seeing and hearing what they're saying now, Nwosu, and what he was saying to Schultz report, Jordan Schultz. We knew we were better than them when we landed in the plane. We walked off the plane. They just knew. And I don't think that that's something that is unusual either. I mean, I think all teams, most of the time, teams go to the Super Bowl, they feel like they're going to win. We feel like we're the best. We're going to go in there, we're going to win the game. Seattle wasn't a huge favorite. Again, it was 4.5 points. But it never seemed like the Patriots ever thought they were going to win. It didn't seem like they ever really thought that. And again, NFL films, they'll edit it how they want, but you would have thought there'd be a little something in there. And there just never was. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We'll have our final observations from the game, including a topic that I can't believe no one's brought up. I cannot believe no one's brought it up. I'm kind of proud, actually, that no one's mentioned it. We'll get to that with your phone calls right after Joe Braverman gets you caught up on what's trending.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending Now is brought to you by Mario's Roofing. We won't soak you to keep you warm and dry. Tonight kicks off NBA All-Star Weekend from the Intuit Dome in Los Angeles with the Rising Stars Challenge. Celtics will be represented by Ron Harper Jr. He's on the G League team, which is coached by former NBA player Austin Rivers. Whoever wins this tournament will be added to the USA vs. World All-Star Game, which takes place Sunday night. Speaking of the Celtics, a little side note from a scheduling standpoint, their home game versus Philadelphia on March 1st has moved from 6 p.m. to prime time at 8 p.m. In baseball news, Red Sox outfielder Roman Anthony has been named as an injury replacement for Team USA in the World Baseball Classic beginning March 5th. Pending a physical, Anthony will replace Diamondbacks outfielder Corbin Carroll, who suffered a broken bone in his hand. Earlier today, Patriots receiver Stephon Diggs pleaded not guilty to his assaulted strangulation charges from December. Next court hearing will be April 1st. Some other NFL news. The league has won its grievance over the NFL Players Association, essentially banning public release of player report cards for franchises. In today's Olympic update from Milan and Cortina, the U.S. women's hockey team won their quarterfinal game over Italy by a final score of 6-0. U.S. figure skater Ilya Malinin came up short, fell down twice in his routine, and dropped from first to eighth place. Essentially, no medal for the USA there. Men's hockey team will be back in action tomorrow afternoon. They continue group play against Denmark. USA remains at 14 total medals, the third most behind Italy and Norway, who have 18. And fresh off a Beanpot Championship earlier this week, 14th-ranked Boston College men's hockey hits the road to face Merrimack. You can listen to that game over on WBEI AM 850. Coverage begins at 6:45. Puck drop is at 7. Homeowners choose Mario's Roofing because they're fair, honest, and provide quality services. Call Mario's Roofing today for a free estimate at 781-344-2420. I'm Joe Braverman, and that's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com.
Hey, play our game, bro. Play what got us here, bro. Win your one-on-ones on third down, compete, and let's drag these. We knew it was going to be 60 minutes, bro. All right, we knew it was going to be 60 minutes. We here, y'all. Yeah, we here. We arrived. Yeah. Let's play this game like we know how to play this game. Right.
That was Morgan Moses on the sideline. Christian Arcan Show here, WEEI. I wanted to play that because if you didn't watch, then you wouldn't know what point of the game that whole speech came at or what the score was in the game. It was 6-0. Morgan Moses is on the sideline making that speech to the offense when it was a 6-0 game. Now, the offense hadn't done Jack Diddley, so it wasn't, they needed a bit of a pump up there. But I thought that was interesting how a leader on that offense, and Morgan Moses is certainly a leader on that offense, how a leader on that offense recognized that that 6-0 lead felt more like it was 26-0 because of just how helpless they were, to stop that Seattle front. Another thing I noticed is that while we did talk a lot about the four-man rush and how the four-man rush was getting home and how Campbell just had trouble with whoever was coming on that side, and all that's true, by the way, but the real big plays, the big important plays, were blitzes. They blitzed early and zero blitzes, too. I mean, they sent the house. They sent the house at Drake May. And that was early on in the game. After that, the blitz that the Patriots could not understand and could not figure out was Witherspoon coming off the corner. And that just kept happening. I mean, it was like a recurring nightmare. Every single time that guy came flying off the side. There was one on the interception, the pick six. They show that in super slow NFL network motion, right? Like, I mean, millisecond, and that's the best thing that they do. When they slow it down so much that it's just, you know, like it's the ball's in the air and it's in the air for like 2 hours. I love that. Oh, that's the best. But on this one, they have May dropping back. And you see Witherspoon coming at him. And it's in super slow motion, and Witherspoon is still coming at him pretty fast. Like, even in NFL film slow-mo, like, you can see he's just closing the gap, like, very quickly. To the point where May thought he could get that pass off. He did. I thought he could. It looked like he could. It looked like he had enough room to make some kind of throw. And instead, Witherspoon not only gets to him, but gets to the ball, flips it up in the air, and then there goes Nwosu the other way, touchdown game. And that was really, yeah, I mean, you know, that was that. But Morgan Moses making that speech there, we're here, guys, we've arrived. Like, it's the second quarter, and no one was playing like that, except Christian Gonzalez. He was the only one. Christian Gonzalez was really the only guy playing with any sort of swagger, any sort of, you know, you're going to have to go through me type of stuff going on there. You didn't see that really from anyone else. And I don't know. I feel like during the year, you didn't really need it that often. May was strong enough in the, you know, these third and fourth quarters, but as a young player developing, you sort of look to the veterans on the team. And, you know, didn't see much of Steph Diggs. Now, he was going through some personal stuff, obviously. Broke up with his girlfriend, reigned in court today. We'll get to that in just a minute because that's pretty interesting. Some elements of that. But real quick, before I get to the phones here, there's one part of the game that I have not mentioned through the first 4 days of the Patriots-Viking funeral, and not one caller or texter has mentioned it either. And that was the referees. The referees. Now, I'm not going to tell you that the referees cost the Patriots the game. But I will tell you that Cooper Kupp did not catch that ball on the sideline. He didn't. That was a missed call. He definitely was still bobbling it and only got 1 foot down. Okay? Would that have changed the game? Probably not. The offsides that didn't get called on the second punt on the second drive, which could have kept that drive going and was a very clear offsides. That one is one that I still think about a little bit.
I hate you, ref!
I think about that one a little bit because that, I think, was really a point in the game where you could have gone one way or the other and it went the other way. And it might have gone that way anyway. Again, Seattle was just suffocating. But you get them on their heels a little bit, you have them thinking they stopped you, and then all of a sudden, oh, actually, it's offsides, and there's a first down, and we're in your territory, we're in field goal range. All of a sudden, it's not a shutout until the fourth quarter anymore. You know? Like, that type of thing still is rattling around in my head a little bit. But I didn't want to sound like a crybaby, and I didn't want to come on the air with it on Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday, so I'm coming on with it today. That one, I'm stuck on that a little bit. Now, it's a missed call. It's the NFL. It's the Super Bowl. Referees miss calls all the time. But you know what also pissed me off a little bit? Was how at the end of the game, at the very end of the game, the refs are throwing all these flags on Seattle. They threw like 4 flags in the last 2 minutes with the game way out of hand. And why were they doing that? Maybe to even it up a little bit? Maybe to make it look a little better in the scorecard? Maybe the scorecard. How about the box score? It's a boxing match all of a sudden. Check the scorecard. Yeah, and the box score. Maybe it was just a little, the flags are a little too Patriots heavy here. Let's even it up. Let's make it look right. You know, like dressing up a crime scene. You know, I got to make this look right.
The penalties did end the game at 4-for-25 for Seattle and 3-for-25 for the Pats.
So there you go. And like all 4 of them came at the end of the game. Wasn't a ton of penalties that got called. But when they missed that offsides on the punt, I was like, what are you doing? They come back from commercial, they're like, you know, they could have called offsides. I was like, yes, they could have, and they should have, because he was clearly offsides. And no one talked, they forgot about it for the rest of the game, and the rest of the game, Seattle went belt to ass, so it's not like, again, that one play was going to change the whole game, but it could have changed some elements of the game. It could have got you across the field, could have got you maybe the out of the goose egg there a little earlier than you did. And who knows? 6-3 at the half is a lot different from 6-0 or 12-3 or whatever. I just, you know, I thought the refereeing all season was bad. And I said that while the Patriots were kicking everybody's ass. So I'm being consistent here. I'm not just crying after the Super Bowl. And by the way, I waited 4 days to do this. I'm not just crying after the Super Bowl. I thought all year that the refereeing in the NFL was very poor. Very poor. And I'm not the only one that noticed it. A lot of other people noticed it too. And the two calls that stand out the most were calls that didn't get made. Cup on the sideline was still clearly bobbling that ball. And I forget who it even was that jumped offside on the punt team. But
In my opinion, that sucked.
It did suck. And I forget who it was, but some guy jumped, and they didn't call it, and that was that. And the rest of the game happened, and they lost. But I'm a little salty about it. I'm still just, what am I going to lie to you people? I don't lie to you. I never come on the show and lie. I never do. I may obfuscate the truth a little bit and not necessarily tell you everything I'm thinking all the time, but you hear most of it. I waited until today to say I did not like the way that game was refereed. Let's go to the phone. 617-779-7937. Our good friend Jay is in North Carolina. Hi, Jay.
Arkan, thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
I've been bitching and complaining about the offense, the punter, the pass, lack of a pass rush, and I said, shut the hell up. You got a 17-4 from nothing. They came to 17-4. They've got a great coach, great offensive coordinator. They've got a pretty decent defense, and they've got a quarterback that if he's given the time, I bet you he could rival Tom Brady. And I think the silver lining was that Seattle showed the weakness, the glaring weakness of the Patriots that needs to be corrected. They'll do it again, and they've given us a good ride. And I'm really appreciative of what they did. So I've changed from a doom and gloom to a roller coaster ride. Hooray, Patriots. Thanks, Karkin.
All right, Jay, thank you. And thanks for all your connecting with the show and engagement. Jay in North Carolina has been right on top of everything all year long. And I think that he's right in the sense that Patriots fans should feel good about this season, and this should be the type of season that you look back at and say, yeah, this was the beginning of something. Even in the loss, even in losing the Super Bowl. You know who lost their first Super Bowl? Patrick Mahomes. Tom Brady took it right to Patrick Mahomes, and they lost that first Super Bowl, and Mahomes went on to become one of the great quarterbacks in the history of the league. So I think that some other things have to go right. They have the coach in place. I do believe they have the quarterback in place. Other things are going to have to go right here. May is going to have to get healthy. He's going to have to be able to elevate his game in the playoffs rather than what we saw where it regressed and the defense had to do everything. The defense is going to have to stay where it is, at the very least, stay at this baseline, probably get better in the offseason. I would imagine that Mike Vrabel is going to pay close attention to that defense and how to make it better. But I think ultimately what we're all looking at, we're all looking at the same thing. We're all looking at the same team with the same shortcomings. Pass rush is one of them. Offensive line. And I think they're going to have to do something in that receiver room. I think that that's, again, going to have to be a priority. Now, I thought what they did this past year worked very well. I think they can continue to add to it. Not necessarily talking about addition by subtraction here, but if you end up bringing in an A.J. Brown or, you know, Alec Pierce or something like that, which I don't think Pierce is going to hit the market, but if you were, you know, to say do that or make a trade, then you rearrange what your hierarchy of wide receivers is, and I think that's ultimately a good thing. But there's still some work to be done here if they want to have next season look anything like this season. If you want to do that, you're going to have to improve because your schedule is going to improve considerably. And you got to be ready for it. Let's go to Kenny in Wilmington. Hello, Kenny.
Hey, Christian, how you doing?
Good, Kenny. What's up?
You missed one of the most egregious calls. I don't blame refs for games because I think plays even out over time. But the Steph Diggs roughing the receiver out there when we were trying to make our comeback.
Mm-hmm.
And then that guy ended up being the one who picked off May later in the game.
Yeah, and you're right. On the sideline, threw him down. Diggs gets up, gets in his face, kind of, you know, mushes him in the face there. Guy took a swing at Diggs. You can't do that. You can't swing on somebody. You're supposed to get ejected for that. The refs didn't call anything. They just sort of let him go. And I think that that was a bad one. Yeah, sure. It wasn't as bad as the offsides. I thought the offsides was worse. Or the lack of offsides call there. But, yeah, I mean, that wasn't like it was done somewhere hidden on the field. You were right there on the sideline. There were people looking right at it, and they decided, no, just let them go. Just let them play. Which normally I'd say, fine, do that. It's not like they threw a ton of flags. But what are you going to do? I was more offended by the cup thing and also by the offsides. But you're right. That was another one. That's one they could have had go another way as well. All right, one more call before the break here. Mike in Rhode Island. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, just quickly. You know, I listen to these two clowns in the middle of the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they talk
about...
Hold on.
Wait, Mike, which two clowns are you talking about? There's lots of clowns that work here. Which two are you specifically referring to?
Oh, God. What is it? Jones and the other fella?
Jones and Keefe, yes. Okay, yes. Two of my favorite clowns.
Yeah, right, okay. And, well, they were my favorite, but... You know, they're knocking May, and I said, gee, I hope this didn't ruin him and his confidence and all mm-hmm. that. I'd like to see a switch in that game with Sam Donald playing quarterback for the Patriots with that paper line in front of him. And how do you think he'd do?
Probably not great, Mike. He didn't do great behind the Seattle line. He didn't have a good game. Sam Darnold did not throw the ball well. He really didn't. It's another thing I took away from watching that, is some of the big Darnold plays were misses. That miss to Smith and Jigba. Which he could have moonwalked into the end zone if Darnold found him there. I think that was that the play? Was that the play where Hawkins missed the sack? I think it might have been. But, you know, that should have been an easy touchdown. And Darnold missed him. And Darnold missed some other guys, too. He missed Cup a couple times. He missed Shaheed. There would have been a touchdown on that other play where Gonzalez recovered on Smith and Jigba and knocked the ball down on, like, the goal line. That if that pass was a better pass, then that's a touchdown too. So he missed Smith and Jigba like a few times. He did not play well. But I'm sure he would have been worse behind the Patriots line. I mean, of course he would have. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. When we come back, Joe Braverman and I are going to give you one free agent and one draft pick that we really want. And as the offseason goes on, we're going to get really into the draft this year, or as much as we can with, you know, baseball going on. But we're going to start off here just taking a quick look at what players that are entering the draft this year could fall to the Patriots late in the round, and also what should they spend some of that money on in free agency. We'll get to that with your phone calls right after this.
But you have to start over. This whole thing starts over in 10 weeks. The offseason program starts in 10 weeks. You know, that's how I look at this. And, you know, when I said that to them, they kind of looked at me like I was crazy. But that's the reality of it. We have a group of guys that played a lot of football. We have a lot of guys that didn't play a lot of football. And as I was taught, talk about the business of the NFL, the businesses. So we're looking for the better, younger, cheaper player every day. And the players that we have are trying to not let that happen. And that's the dynamic, and that's the business of the National Football League.
It's Mike Vrabel. Discussing the offseason, the realities of the offseason, what that's going to entail for some guys. We'll go deep into the offseason later on, in the month. Let it breathe a little bit. But I wanted to, at the very least, get a foothold and at least get a couple of names out there as to who I'm looking at, who I'm coveting, who I would like the Patriots to spend some of their cap money on, and who I'd like them to take a good look at in the draft as well. Joe Braverman, I know we both have our list here. It's not really a list. We're just going to go one free agent, one draft pick, and one beer. No, we're going to have one each. I know there's trades out there to be made, and we'll do trades and talk about trades maybe some other night. But tonight I wanted to get who you like in the free agent market, who you like in the draft, and then I'll give you mine. Who are you looking at there, Joe?
So free agency-wise, I mean, my preliminary is that I do think the big fish are out there in the trade market, which again we'll get to later. But if I'm looking free agency wise, I do think Vrabel is a defensive guy, so he's going to look defense first. And I just see Trey Hendrickson out there, and he's been a target, at least for me, for the past 2 years or so, ever since he got into a rift with Cincinnati about the contract and all that stuff. I thought he would fit so well on the Patriots. And that interior line, as you have brought up this week, is so good with Williams and potentially Barmore. If you just get one premier edge rusher like a Trey Hendrickson who can fill that role, your defense just becomes that more scary.
I agree. I think that Hendrickson is going to be probably the belle of the ball here when it comes to this. It's the second year that a Cincinnati Bengal is going to be like the crown jewel of the free agent market. Now, Higgins never even really made it. He was initially going to be the big free agent wide receiver that was going to get some crazy contract. He ends up going back to the Bengals. What do you know? Patriots fans were really, really hoping that T. Higgins would want to come to New England. And no. No. Not only that, no one did, except for Steph Diggs. And Steph Diggs came here and had a great year. So, in your face, T. Higgins. And in your face, DK Metcalf. And in your face, Chris Godwin. What happened to you guys? Where'd you all end up? Hendrickson is going to get a ton of offers if he hits the market. I could see the Bengals somehow, some way, figuring out a way to get him back and keep him under the cap. I don't know how they do it, but I didn't think they'd be able to do it for Burrow, Chase, Higgins, Hendricks. I mean, that's just another one. Eventually, you run out of money, but you can also restructure. You can restructure other guys. You can do all sorts of different things in order to make the cap space work and give guys big money. But if he does hit the market, that's a guy I would certainly like. I think that's, you know, shooting for the moon there. Absolutely. I'd like him too. My free agent, though, at the edge rushing position is Al-Quadin Muhammad. And you probably are surprised to hear that because there's a lot of other names that are out there. This guy's a defensive end. Also linebacker, you know, sort of plays on that outside. He's 30 years old. And he had more sacks last year than any of these other free agent linemen. He had 11 sacks last year. It's a career high. And he is in a system, obviously, in Detroit now. He's bounced around a little bit. He was drafted by the Saints. Played 4 years in Indy, then in Chicago in the last two seasons in Detroit. And in Detroit, he is, after a quiet year last year, played all 17 games this year and was a disruptive force there in that pass rush. Now, who knows if that same system, if he's going to be able to work out in another system. But considering his age, I think that you will be able to get him for without having to pay Trey Hendrickson money. And considering the output, that's the type of guy I'd go for. There's other bigger names. There's Khalil Mack, a free agent. We'll see if he hits the market. There's Joey Bosa, Hassan Reddick, Von Miller. You know, there's guys who are going to be out there and names that are going to be out there. But I like Muhammad. I think I like Muhammad. He had more say. He was more disruptive and got to the QB more than any of those guys, including Hendrickson. So that's who I'm looking at. Let's do a wide receiver, too. Do you have a wide receiver in mind?
I do have someone in mind. Again, I think the receiver is a big fish, but I was a big fan of Romeo Doubs last year.
I like Dobbs, too. Dobbs is my guy, too.
Yeah, he's just that. I didn't realize how loaded that Packers receiving room was. Like, he was behind on the depth chart to Christian Watson, mm-hmm. to Dontavian Wicks, before he got injured to Tucker Kraft, the tight end. I think Doubs is sneaky, a really impressive talent that I would love to see the Patriots pick up.
I'd like to see them get him, too. With these wide receivers, basically all of these wide receivers, except for Juwan Jennings, because it's the Niners and they're in cap hell, I think Alec Pierce probably goes back to the Colts. I think Doubs, I hate to say it, probably goes back to the Packers. I'd love him. Keenan Allen's a free agent. Christian Kirk's a free agent. Wandale Robinson, who you'll remember had a couple of real nice games there with Jackson Dart. But with their commitment to, what the hell is his name? The wide receiver that they drafted 2 years ago got hurt
this
year.
Malik Nabers.
Malik Nabers, thank you. Their commitment to Nabers and Nabers coming back, I think that Robinson may end up being the type of receiver that slips through the cracks and becomes a cap casualty. Now, we'll see if that ends up happening or not. We'll see if the Giants don't make a big effort to bring him back there. Harbaugh's the coach now. I know they have a good thing going, but where would you rather play right now, the Giants or the Patriots? You're up in the Northeast. You know, the weather's not going to get any better. New York's maybe a little bit more fun than Boston. Sorry, everybody. But in terms of which team, you want to get away from a Giants team that's still probably a couple years away and come to a team that was in the Super Bowl last year, I think that could be a possibility. All right, draft picks, who do you like?
I am looking at tackle. Okay. Even though I did praise Will Campbell there, but I think to have the flexibility, if you can get Caden Proctor from Alabama, this guy is 6'7", 366. And we also talked earlier in the week about the uncertainty of Morgan Moses.
Right.
Like, he's getting up there in age, so it's like it's better to have the backup plan ready for when the time comes. So Caden Proctor, you can, if Campbell gets hurt, maybe slide him into left tackle, or if Moses gets hurt slash retires, throw him at right tackle.
Okay. I got two guys that I like. An edge rusher and a wide receiver. That's where I'm mostly focused right now. I think they should also make some moves on the line. But my main focus right now is at edge and at wide receiver. And on the edge, I like T.J. Parker from Clemson, who is a big, powerful guy. He had a great 2024, 2025. He sort of dropped off a little bit, which is why I think he may be available to the Patriots at the end of the round. If he was, if he declared after 2024, he probably would have gone top 10, top 15. Now you might be able to get him at 31 or wherever it is, you know, if they trade up or something like that. He's a guy that I like a lot. I liked him both of these last 2 years. Big long arm guy. Sorry, Will Campbell. But big upper body strength guy, just sort of, you know, not necessarily like a speed rusher, but a big powerful guy that I think could complement Williams and Barmore and those other guys pretty well. The wide receiver that I like that I think could fall to where the Patriots are picking is Denzel Boston from Washington. He's 6'4", big physical guy, red zone presence. They do have Mac Hollins, and I think that eventually you're going to want to replace what Hollins gives you, and I think this guy at least physically has some of those tools because I think Hollins was a huge factor in the offense this year, and I like what he was able to do and what McDaniels was able to scheme up for him and get him involved. So there you go. There's one free agent and one draft pick, although I did two of each. So I guess two of both of those just to wet your whistle a little bit as we move towards the offseason.
The extra step in the conversation.
Indeed. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Steph Diggs was in court today in Dedham, right in my backyard. And we'll talk about that, some of the details we learned about that, and also this team and the leadership of this team, the culture of this team that Mike Vrabel has put together, what that means for the leaders in the locker room who aren't necessarily on the coaching staff. We'll get to all of that with your phone calls as we move into the 7 o'clock hour.